Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Hawk Week podcast. I'm Hawk Week editor Matthew Appleby, and today I'm with Nick Hamilton of Barnsdale Gardens. Now, Nick's written an autobiography called The Right Genes about the relationship with his late father, Jeff Hamilton, the pioneer in peat-free organic gardening, who presented BBC Gardeners World for 17 years. Now, Nick trained at Rittle College before gaining experience at several wholesale nurseries before going into business with his dad at Barnsdale. And they worked together for several years before Jeff's untimely death in 1996. So, welcome, Nick.
Hello, Matthew.
Excellent. Good to see you. Now, how did this book, The Right Genes, come about? What was the inspiration to do it now?
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's been something that was rattling around in my head for some considerable time. And with a pressure of work and not really knowing where to start, how to write it, and, you know, what sort of format I wanted to do it in, it just sort of stayed rattling around in my head, really. But it was my wife, Helen, who basically said, you know, you've just got to do it. And so I sat down, and actually it was an awful lot easier than I thought it would be to put the words down literally on paper.
And how did it feel writing it?
It was an emotional roller coaster, I have to say. I did occasionally find myself sort of welling up a little bit sometimes, remembering, some really lovely things that happened in my life, you know, with my dad and the way that he used to do stuff and the unique sort of things that he did. And also just revisiting things that I hadn't revisited for years and forgotten about, filed away at the back of my head somewhere and never came to the fore again. So, you know, it was a really wonderful, wonderful experience.
It certainly shows a phenomenal memory, and there's lots of things that I didn't know about in there. Now, with Jeff's big break, it all came about through getting Barnsdale and writing for magazines. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we moved to the Midlands from Hertfordshire, where I was born and brought up originally. When my dad found this derelict garden centre. He'd been a landscaper for quite some time, a self-employed landscaper, and just got fed up with that, sort of knocking on people's doors, asking for money all the time, and then promising they'd pay him, and then never did. And he just said he felt like a debt collector. So he wanted to get out of that and work for his dad for a bit in a business that he had. And whilst driving around for that, found this derelict garden centre. So we moved there. And my dad was all about plants. He wasn't about all the other things that went alongside it. You know, he knew he had to stock them and sell them, but his interest was plants, and of course they're the thing that makes you the least money. And he wasn't a businessman. He would admit quite happily he was probably the world's worst businessman. So when the garden centre went bust, he was topping carrots basically in Lincolnshire and doing sort of stuff like that, and then decided that he needed to find some means of supporting his family that was better than that, and decided to write a couple of articles for Garden News, sent them off, and fortunately it was Jeff Amos that picked those up and went to the editor and said, you know, we need to talk to this guy. And he all went from there. So from Garden News, he then went to Practical Gardening, was the editor of Practical Gardening magazine, and he'd moved to Barnsdale in Rutland. Now, Barnsdale was a big hall, and he rented a double red brick cottage from the family that owned the hall with a couple of acres of land behind, which is where he did his sort of set up for the photography for the magazine. So he'd have fruit and veg and ornamental areas as well there. And then Gardeners World asked him to guest on a programme because he was deemed a gardening expert, being the editor of what was then the top magazine of its day. And fortunately for him, the producer-director, John Kenyon, saw what he thought would develop into, ultimately what he did develop into.
When this was all happening, though, it must have been quite hard times for you, because the garden centre closing down and, you know, not having any money and all that type of thing. How were you feeling at the time?
It was a very difficult time. My mum and dad had split up by then. You know, in many ways, it's fortunate that my mum is French. In some ways, it's not. But in many ways, it is. And the best way, certainly as a youngster and a teenager, was the fact that she was a fantastic cook and could make something out of nothing, which was what you needed in those times, because, you know, sometimes money came, sometimes it didn't, and that's the way that it was, obviously, depending on whether he had work or not. Until he started regularly writing, that's the way it was. So it was very tough, but, you know, if nothing else, it gives you a really good grounding. And obviously, you know, with the, you know, the fact that horticulture generally isn't a cash-rich industry, it sets you up well for life generally. So, you know, I was never one to expect nor get expensive things, and I think that makes you a very grounded person.
No, indeed, and at this time you were. With training at Rittle and then into nurseries. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so when the time came for me to go to college, you know, we went to the British Growers Look Ahead at the NEC, actually, and with my dad, and I'd made a long list of all of the universities and the colleges that I wanted to look at that were doing horticultural courses. I'd got a great pile of prospectuses at home, and my dad promised we'd go and look at each of them. We managed to look at Rittle, which is where he went, and he managed to manoeuvre me around the whole of that show without ever coming across another college or university. So Rittle it was for me, and I went and did what started off as an ordinary national diploma, ended up just as a national diploma in commercial horticulture. Passed that with credit, and then... It was a sandwich year, so I went to work at Derby Nursery Stock in Norfolk, and they asked me if I would come back and work for them full time after my college course had finished. And I went back there for about 4 years, and then I moved on to Raveningham Gardens, again just south of Norwich in Norfolk, and worked there for Sir Nicholas Bacon, and then did another couple of wholesale, short stints at wholesale nursery before I decided that it was time that my dad sort of stuck to his word, and we set up a little business together. So I then came back to Barnsdale and imposed myself in 1989, very early 1989, and gradually twisted his arm until the opportunity to buy this piece of land for where we've set up the nursery came up, and we went from there.
Ah, cool. Now, the book, it ends with John Kenyon's call and just getting into Gardener's World. So there's another book coming, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, I have the idea was to write a book, and then when you start, you then realise that there's so much material that you don't really want to write something the size of War and Peace. So I divided it into sort of two, and I thought, well, you know, if I stop it when he starts on Gardener's World, and obviously that's where the people became familiar with him, so nobody knew who he was really before then, which made that first book a really lovely thing. So, you know, the first book is called The Right Genes, and genes is spelt G-E-N-E-S. The second book is also going to be called The Right Genes, and it's going to be spelt J-E-A-N-S. So he was the first gardener to garden in jeans. So I just thought it was a nice play on words. And that will go from that very first program right the way through the following 17 years.
Ah, oh, brilliant. How similar are you to Jeff, do you think?
I said in the book that, you know, that I once heard that the middle son, or the middle child, and I'm the middle boy of three, and is the one that is most like their father, and that very much is the case with me. I'm very much a chip off the old block, and I, you know, I see so much of my dad in me, you know, and I think that we're very similar. Neither of my two brothers are interested in horticulture, never went into horticulture. I've always been interested, literally from the day I was born.
Wow. So why do you think Jeff is still recalled so fondly?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I have a very biased view, I suppose, but I try and step back and look at it. And obviously I speak to many thousands of people through the year about it, and they comment about it. And I think that, you know, there are a few people in the media, generally on TV and radio, who have that ability, and it's a natural ability to connect with people so that they think that they're talking to them personally and nobody else. And they have that relationship, they build that relationship with them. And he definitely had that. And I think that, you know, he was a very honest, a very down-to-earth sort of person. And that really did come across on the TV. And you very much got what you got. And I think that's what endeared himself to people.
It seems to me he was quite ahead of his time with organic and peat-free, and that's kind of all coming home to roost now. What was your view of all that at the time?
I have to say that you know, when he made his Koi Rocks, I did think he'd completely lost the plot. And he was of an age when you know that could have happened, and certainly when I was you know, in my early 30s, I thought that he was of an age when that could have happened. Now that I've surpassed the age that he got to, I'm not quite so sure, obviously, although my children keep trying to tell me I'm the same. Yes, I mean, I was very involved with the peat free thing. Obviously we started the nursery by then. We were growing peat free and have been ever since in the nursery with stuff. And so we sort of developed that compost that he used, peat-free compost we used here on the nursery with him. But the organic thing, you know, that was something that he did, and very much for the you know, the better living and the not putting, you know, stuff in my body I didn't need to put in. So I was very supportive of that. But to be honest, I mean, you know, it's 26 years since he passed away, and there are certain things that they're still sort of catching up with that he was talking about and was doing. So, you know, incredibly proud, obviously, of everything that he achieved, but certainly, you know, those sort of things really do stand out.
Have things moved slower than you expected in terms of organics and peat-free?
Very much so. I think that when, you know, I can understand that when he passed away, that people wanted to do it differently. You know, I get incredibly proud and sometimes, you know, a little bit sort of emotional about the fact that people, you know, still use him as the yardstick at which to compare all the other horticulturists in the media by. And that is fantastic to say, well, you know, he's the best and you know, the rest of them are catching up. But I think that when he passed away, they definitely felt that they needed to do something different to try and break away from that, because they didn't want, you know, somebody who was a substitute Jeff Hamilton, as it were, which was quite right. And I think the impetus, certainly for organics and for peat-free gardening, lost quite a lot of its way then and has struggled to catch back up again.
Now, you talk about Jeff's blue denim jeans, and but you also talk about jacket and tie gardeners that came before, for instance Percy Thrower and Peter Seabrook, who died this year, and Jeff and Peter had their run-ins over the years. So how do you feel about all that now?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, Peter had his view, and I got on fine with Peter. He always used to come and chat to me and talk to see me at the flower shows that I attended and other things that I saw him at. And we had a very good relationship. My dad had a bit of an up and down relationship with Peter. You can't get on with everybody. They each had their own view, and for whatever reason, they each dug their heels in about it and weren't prepared to concede with each other, whereas they may well have conceded a little bit with somebody else, and I don't know why. But like I say, I mean, you know, they were both very keen that their view was right, and sometimes when somebody has a view where they feel that they're absolutely right, there is no changing them, whether they are right or not, and who's to say, who was in that respect. But I don't have a problem. I had a good relationship with Peter Seabrook.
No, both looked back on very fondly. I mean, but have you got any idea why that stubbornness came between them?
No, I have no idea. I have no idea at all. I think my dad would say what he felt, you know, and it may be that Peter took something in slightly the wrong way, and it wasn't meant, you know. Sometimes you can, you know, and that's the trouble with the English language. It's very easily distorted because so many words can mean different things. And I don't really know, but it may well have just been something as simple as that. There was no, you know, real animosity. It was very much more of a heel digging in, as it were.
Yeah, I guess we can all look back and smile now. Now, looking ahead with Barnsdale, quarter of a century or more there. So what's the plans?
The plans is you know, we keep rolling on. We're at the moment we're battling a prospect of the possibility of a solar farm next door, which is a nightmare scenario for me and would probably close, well, would close me if it happened, but I'm being very positive about that. So that's the battle I have at the moment. But as we do with the gardens themselves, you know, we move on, we keep moving on. It's not a historical garden. A garden, as my dad always said, is a work in progress, and ours is no different. So, we keep changing, we keep trying to educate our visitors. I do very much see the gardens not as a tourist attraction as such, but more of an educational facility. And obviously there's no better way to educate people by doing it subversively, so that they're enjoying themselves and things are soaking in, they don't even realize they're learning. And so that's what we're looking to do continually. You know, we will gradually change a garden over a period of maybe 1, 2, 3 years, and that's a rolling process that we have, so the gardens are always changing.
Wow, okay. And tell us about the solar farm. What's happening there?
Well, there's a prospect for a 200 acres, starting from our boundary hedge, of 10-foot high solar panels that move with the sun. So they'll be 10-foot high in the morning and 10-foot high in the evening over our hedge, which is 6-foot high. And for as far as the eye can see, and that's the proposal. And the reason they're using that field is because it's the closest field they can get to the substation. And apparently the main cost of putting a solar farm together in that respect is the cost of the cable. So the shortest distance they can do. So, you know, I mean, it's difficult. Sometimes people sort of think that we're anti-solar when we're not, or anti-alternative energy when we're not. You know, I keep reminding people we've been at the forefront here of so many ecological and environmental initiatives. You know, we're very much in agreement of alternative power, but it shouldn't be alternative power at any cost. And, you know, if you come to visit a garden and your perception is of being in the middle of an industrial estate, because all you can see are these blooming panels over and the noise that comes from them and the noise that comes from the battery storage containers, you're not going to come back again. If people don't come back again, then we will no longer be here. And that would be, you know, a very sad thing for this country if we went.
Well, good luck with that. I hope that all works out for you.
Thank you.
I remember 3 or 4 years ago talking to you about one person who used to work with you, Adam Frost, another TV gardener.
Yeah.
And at the time they were talking about him being Monty Dunn's successor. And I think, you know, he stands in for Monty quite often these days. So tell us about how Adam came to be working with you back in the day.
Well, we we decided that I needed to progress the development of the garden area around here. So the sort of the garden that we have is just over 8 acres, and it's split into two halves. So we've got what I call the TV garden area, which was the base for my dad every Friday night, and then the nursery garden area, which was the bit that he bought in late 1989 that I was subsequently developing in. But I was spending more and more time propagating in the nursery, potting and doing the nursery stuff, and not doing so much of the garden development. So my dad decided, as he did, that if he took on another article to write, we could afford to employ somebody to help me to develop the garden. So Adam came to work under me there, developing the gardens, and then obviously doing bits and bobs for my dad as well. And the article that my dad wrote paid for that, Adam was here for some considerable time. Always knew, I think, that eventually he would go self-employed. I think you realise straight away the sort of, what people are like. We're quite a good judge of character in that respect, and I don't think that, he was ever going to stay being employed. I think he was very much a person who wanted to be his own boss and do his own thing. And that's, and he's obviously done very well for himself subsequently.
And what do you see as the future, Adam? Have you heard anything about him sort of doing more on Gardener's World?
I there is nobody at the BBC now that we knew from the days now. I mean, it's 26 years since my dad passed away. So, the staff rotate relatively regularly there, and so I've to be honest, Matthew, I've not heard anything at all about it, so I can't really say. And as we all know with these things, you only need to get a new person come in to take over the reins of a program, and their ideas are different to the person who was there before, and it can all change, and so we really don't know at all.
Well, he certainly forms part of the lineage from Barnsdale anyway. Now, excellent. It's been really nice speaking to you, Nick, but we always ask at Hort Week one final question, which is, what is your favourite plant? What plant would you take to a desert island if you were stuck on a desert island?
Well, I suppose firstly, my plants change, favourite plants change with the seasons, but I suppose if I was really, really pushed, then I would probably say a penstemon. I don't know why I've had this fascination with penstemon. I mean, they're such good value plants in that they flower for so long. They're easy to keep, they're good for beneficial insects as well. I have a fascination for those. And just by the by, there's also one named after my dad, but that's not the reason why. I was fascinated with them before that.
Brilliant, penstemon. Excellent. Okay, now thanks very much to Nick Hamilton from Barnsdale Gardens. I'm Matthew Appleby, Hort Week's editor. Now, make sure you never miss a Hort Week podcast. Subscribe to or follow Hort Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. So once again, thanks very much to Nick Hamilton. I'm Matthew Appleby, and goodbye until next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.